ਮਰਦ ਅਗਮੜਾ ਵੀਰ ਜੋਤਾ ਮੇਰਾ ਬਾਪੂ ਕਲਗੀਆਂ ਵਾਲਾ ਏ ਜੋ ਸਦਾ ਹੀ ਅੰਗ ਸੰਗ ਰਹਿੰਦਾ ਏ ਮੇਰਾ ਬਾਪੂ ਕਲਗੀਆਂ ਵਾਲਾ ਏ।
ਲਿਸਨਰ ਡਿਸਕ੍ਰੈਸ਼ਨ ਇਜ਼ ਐਡਵਾਈਜ਼ਡ, ਮੈਚੁਰ ਆਡੀਅੰਸ ਇਜ਼ ਓਨਲੀ।
Welcome to episode 6 of the Buzzkill podcast, where we ruin your December partying with the sakiya of Guru Gobind Singh Ji's Kurbaniya. I saw some posts. Hey, Sarpanch, how are you doing, man? Let's give it there. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, good, man. You know, it was Pudanmashi recently. Things are good, man. How are things with you?
It's good. It's good. Good. Yeah.
Tell me what these people posting. What did they say?
Yeah, they're saying, oh, and there's nothing against Sikhi about I understand that, like, celebrating Christmas or whatever, putting trees up, but like somebody had posted, like, you know, don't forget your the Kurbaniya, Guru Gobind Singh Ji in December and stuff. And people on that post were like, well, you know, we're supposed to, you know, celebrate everybody's faith and everything. It's like there's a limit to all that shit, man. Like, I know Sikhi is a quote unquote a liberal, not so liberal in my opinion, but people think it's such a liberal term. But let's not.
It's both. It's definitely a bit of both. Okay. First of all, to the people saying, "Oh, you gotta," you know, that implying that it's a buzzkill to think about Guru Gobind Singh Ji. Wow, what a bunch of fucking idiots, man. I don't know what else to say to that.
I can't believe it.
I know. Well, it is what it is, man. But that doesn't stop. That won't stop this show.
No, Buzzkill Podcast, Episode 6. So, in this episode, we're going to get into the siege of Anandapur and what was happening during the siege and what led up to the siege. I think in the last episode, we talked about that. There's a little bit more we're going to add. And then the next episode, we're going to do basically the jungs at Sarsa on the riverbank there, Chamkor Sahib, and then the Chhote Sahib, Jad Shidiyan. So, to get into it, I mean, there's a lot of those, you know what I've noticed? Everybody's doing podcasts now, right? Even we just picked up a mic and started doing it too. Yeah. But have you seen those Punjabi Western podcasts, like Western board podcasts of like just people just sitting around on couches and just talking about dumb shit?
Yes, I see. I noticed that a lot on TikTok and their, you know, their life coaches. And I don't know, man. They're self-proclaimed life coaches, but there's definitely some irony in there, man. Because half these guys don't practice what they preach. I'll tell you that right now. I'll tell you that straight up.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, yeah, they pick up a cup of Starbucks and they start filming.
Not even Starbucks, dude. Some of these guys are straight up drinking alcohol during their oh,
like
and
that.
Talking
one.
About and they're trying to preach to us about productivity and how to live your life and how to be the best version of yourself, and you know, and but at the same time they're talking about their alcoholism. I don't know, man. Like, they obviously alcoholism is serious. They you know, I hope they get the help that they need, but there's definitely irony there.
Well, that one clip you sent me, I don't know what the hell they're drinking, man, but it looked like wine. And they're talking about the Guru, the Granth Sahib and the holy books.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I mean, completely inappropriate.
I messaged them on TikTok. Okay. And I said, well, I basically said, did you just call the Guru Granth Sahib holy books? And then they they cut off the they totally took off comments after that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, they should know that, you know, first of all, calling it that is inappropriate, but then, you know, going another step and drinking alcohol while talking about it on a public forum, I think it's inappropriate. And then on top of that, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of self-proclaimed life coaches popping up everywhere, but, you know, if there's one thing that, you know, I personally, it's hypocrites, people that don't take their own advice, you know. I've got a lot of stories of that, of people who do that, but yeah, it is what it is, man.
Like these real estate agents?
There's a lot of, yeah, a lot of these people coming up that, some of them are realtors, some of them do other things, but you know, they're kind of self-proclaimed life coaches that, 100% don't practice what they preach. It's hilarious, actually.
Well, cause the market's slow now,
mm-hmm.
with the real estate market, right?
Yeah.
So they have to, I guess, find another shtick, as they say,
yeah,
online. And it's very cringe, man.
Anybody could become a life coach now, man. It's hilarious. Like, you could find something on YouTube, like, you know, and just fucking and just say it somewhere.
Yeah. Like, I bet you those guys, they get up like at 11 a.m. fucking lunchtime. Their mom makes them fucking, you know, pronta and a cup of chai. And they start saying, yeah, you know, if you want to be a good entrepreneur, you got to wake up at 4 a.m., take a cold.
Yeah. Wake up at 4, start a small business, meditate. Guarantee they never meditate in their life. You know, all this shit. Like, go for like a 5-mile jog, all this bullshit. Like, dude, we know.
Yeah, they're like, by 7 a.m. I already have 3 meetings.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? If you really want to know like a true morning routine, you talk to a real gursek, man. Yeah. Those are real like morning routines. Those are like, you know, by the book.
Not 3 a.m., 4 a.m.
Yeah. But,
so,
yeah. They're annoying. They're popping up everywhere, but it is what it is, man.
It's cringe, man. I think the Punjabi community, like, if you're going to start a podcast, like, there's nothing wrong with starting a podcast, but do things of substance.
You know, the funny thing is, like, you know, like I mentioned, they're telling us how to live our lives, but then, you know, they're also basically in the same stories. They're telling us how people in the family call them alcoholics, and they're, you know, they're telling us their problems with their spouses and all this stuff. It's like, you know, maybe you should take your own advice and work on that instead of preaching to us. I don't know. I take issue with it, but what do you think?
No, I've heard a lot of stories of realtors getting into alcoholism after becoming a realtor, especially these young bucks out there, these young Punjabis in Surrey and probably Brampton, same shit.
Yeah, because it's kind of sad, man. It's common in a lot of different professions. People definitely have to be careful of getting into that, man. Like, once you're into that cycle, it's serious. I know some realtors, like, but they don't do it because of work, though. They're not working. They'll stay at the office late to drink with their other realtor buddies. It's like a social thing. They're not working.
No.
Fucking bullshit.
And could you imagine you're a client and you need something done, like you need your paperwork sent to you?
Yeah, you have like a closing tomorrow.
And the guy's like, chill, man. Chill for a bit.
Yeah.
Like, but don't worry, man. Don't worry, man. It's all good. Like, you know how they fucking talk.
Yeah.
Anyways, so have you heard of that Pracharik Sarbjeet Tunda?
No, I gotta look up this guy. Sarbjeet Tunda?
Yeah, Dhunda. He's like one of those missionary assholes who says Dasam Barney isn't Barney. And he's like part of the Kagriana Neki crew, the Kalani crew.
Tunda, yeah, I see him here.
Like his bootta, like he looks like he shaves his dadi. He looks like he's like just a goatee.
Yeah. What about him?
So during the Khalsa Vahid, the Amrit Pal Singh is doing, they stopped at his pin and they did prachar there. Like,
yeah,
basically calling his shit out.
Okay.
And wow. Tunda comes with like a video, and he's his compass is rocked. Like, you could tell he's mad. And he's just saying, oh, yeah, if you want to do Vajad, you know, we could do it. You know, you guys are walking around with Big Karpana, this and that. If you want to debate, you know, don't bring in Dasam Barney, only Guru Granth Sahib Barney, this and that. It was bullshit. Man, I have a feeling that his number's up pretty soon, man. I don't know. I just have a feeling that it seems like there's a huge, like a Sikhi tsunami happening in Punjab. And people are just going to, like, this tsunami is just going to wash out all these fucking idiots.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, Amarpal Singh was on Sarbjeet's turf.
That's straight crazy. Up in his turf. No other Pachadik fucking did that, man.
Mm-hmm.
How many years has Tunda been doing Nindya of, like, even our Astana, Hajur Sahib, all that, Dasam Barney? Nobody went to his pen and, like, just, you know, put down their flag and said, no, man, your bullshit isn't going to go anymore.
Yeah. That's crazy. I actually recently discovered this KPS Gill guy. I don't know how I never heard this guy before. You've heard of him, right?
Yeah, he's like the butcher, man.
Man, yeah, he is calling out Sant Eshwar Singhji, Sant Atar Singhji, you name it. He's doing the Nindya.
Not KPS Gill. KPS Gill is the cop.
Oh, who's DPS Gill?
DSP.
DSP. DSP Gill. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, sorry to the audience. It's not KPS. It's not. It's whoever you just said. That guy.
Yeah, that guy. He's like part of the Tunda crew on TikTok. He looks like your typical perverted cha-cha, man.
How I discovered this on TikTok, and I saw this guy like calling him out. He had like his face covered.
I've seen that guy.
He was basically implying that they like beat the shit out of this Gill guy, and that's the reason that he went on break. But this Gill guy is saying that he just took a break from social media. But no, but apparently like he was attacked somewhere.
Yeah, apparently I heard that a lot from a lot of people that he got his ass kicked.
So then I went on Gill's TikTok and I saw what he's all about. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
You kind of see why. Like he basically does Nindya of everybody. Like, I don't get it. Like what these guys get out of it. And like, if you know this guy, I'm sure he has a circle. Like people in a circle, don't they just be like, yo, shut the fuck up, man. You're talking stupid shit. You need to get your ass kicked. Or people in a circle, don't they have any arnik to be to kind of grab him by the collar and say, shut the fuck up, man?
Yeah.
Oh, Arnold, he lives in the state somewhere, right? Let's say he lives in Cali. Like, I mean,
you know, even if you don't have people around you, I don't know how you don't have like the self-awareness to just have that fear. You know how people say fear God, man? Like the stuff he's saying to call out true saint. He's not calling out like, you know, shady people. He's calling out the true Mahapurks.
Yeah, he doesn't call out Kagriyawala. Like, he doesn't call out Neki. He doesn't call out any Tunda. He doesn't call out any of these assholes.
Exactly.
Right? So that basically his pop is going to eat him alive. Right? He's creating this. They say that the poppies, like Nindix, they create the sword that cuts their own head off.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's a sad thing. He doesn't have that self-awareness. I just don't think he has it, man. Like, it's crazy.
His gun was gonna. It's gonna. We've seen it happen to so many Nindiks and everything, man. It's just a matter of time. It's not even a matter of what or if. It's a matter of literally time. Like your karma is gonna get you, man. You're forging the sword itself. That's basically gonna end you.
Yeah.
Anyways, fucking Tunda's an asshole. Yo, I was reading. You know Bhai Sukhdev Singh Sukha? You know Bhai Harjinder Singh Jinda Bhai Sukhdev Singh Sukha?
Yeah.
You know how they shot Ved there, right?
Yeah, and they got that famous photo. Are they brothers?
No, they're friends.
They're friends. Okay. They got that famous photo though, right?
Yeah, of them hugging.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. feeding each other sweets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. After yeah. the not the death sentence.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. did you know that Sukhdevin Sukha was working on his master's in English?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like how people think a lot of these Kharku Singhs were like uneducated.
No, that's false. Like Sant Teja Singh, not the one that recently Sant Teja Singh in the 70s. I think he was close to PhD level, or I think he was doctorate level. He was actually sent from another Mahaputra from India to Vancouver and various cities to kind of here and make sure that we're following Maryada. A lot of these things educated. That doesn't surprise me at all that he's educated, has a formal education.
Yeah, because if you read their jail letters, man, it's like they use examples from other parts of the world of like revolutionaries and stuff. Like their stuff wasn't even by Gajan Singh Butsingwala. If you read his letters to the president of India, like he is a very well studied and well written letters using history as like your precedence kind of thing.
Nice. No, that's awesome.
So,
yeah, that doesn't surprise me one bit. I actually think of Ramji, like when I listen to his katha, you can tell that they're educated. Like they're using, you know, words in English like telepathy and ecstasy and these all these complicated like terminology to give examples. So, doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. So we're going to get right into it then.
Let's do it.
Okay. So we started off, we ended off last week with the Maharaj having, no, Bahariyanaj having beef with Maharaj. Maharaj doesn't have beef with anybody. It's all them always starting, you know, pungay with Maharaj. And basically, so the first jang that they had was 19. So Maharaj was 19 years old. So it carried on for a couple more decades of Maharaj just having continuous skirmishes and battles with these Bahariya Raji. And the funny thing is the Bahariya Raji kept losing each battle.
Yeah.
And the fame and the people, the Sangat just kept surrounding Guru Sahib just kept growing and growing. But the great thing about Guru Gobind Singh is even he won so many battles against these Bahariya Raja, he never took even a centimeter of their land. He would literally win whatever area and then just give it back.
Wow.
And then they would fight again against him. And they just kept, and Maharaj, and the Singhs and Maharaj, they just kept shit-kicking the Bahariya Raja. So the Bahariya Raji then started trying to get some more support. So they got the Jalandhar Suba and the Sarhand Suba. So Sarhand Suba was Wajir Khan, and then Jalandhar Suba was another Wajir. So they tried to get some more, basically more army power to fight Maharaj.
Mm-hmm.
So at Lohgarh, there was a jang, and it's a very famous jang. That's where Bhai Bajitar Singh put the spear through the drunk elephant's head. So in that jung, Jalandhar Suba, Sarhand Suba, and all the Bahariya Raji, they had about 100,000 army force surrounding Lohgarh fort. But the first thing they were going to do was send the drunken elephant to kind of basically bash open the door. Kind of like a Gigan there, like almost like a ram. What's the word for that? The cops use it. SWAT uses it, like a battering ram.
Yeah.
Because they knew that every time they come close to a Lohgarh fort, that the Singhs would snipe them with the arrows, right?
Yeah.
And so they sent the drunk elephant. And so they basically, and this elephant was like the biggest, one of the biggest elephants that the basically these the Mughal forces had in their stable, I guess. like the biggest one, like the most steroided out one.
Yeah, the one with rabies or something.
Basically, the Liver King freaking's buddy.
Yeah.
So you, as we know, with testosterone, when you pack something with testosterone, they get even more. When they get mad, it's like rage, it's like blind rage, and then you throw alcohol on top of that. So they made the elephant drunk. Then they basically plated the elephant with like layers of metal, right? Mm-hmm. And then attached to the trunk and attached to the tusks, they had like these huge balls of chain, like these huge spike balls on chain. So when the elephant would move his head, it would basically be like a, basically, if anybody was in the way, it would just take your head off. Like there was no, just imagine like a chain with a huge spike ball on it.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a couple of those on the tusks, on each tusk of the elephant, right? Because the elephant was covered in metal, so it wasn't going to hurt the elephant. But whoever was in front or whoever the elephant was going to go after, they would get the brunt of it. So as the elephant's coming towards the fort, Maharaj sends Bhai Bajita Singh. Maharaj had actually sent another Singh who was much bigger and actually strong and so-called brave warrior, but I think he backed out. He actually escaped from Logar. He jumped the wall, and then he fell and he broke his back. Okay. And then he died. I think he got bit by a snake or something after that too. So he died a pretty shitty death, right? But then Bhai Bajita Singh, he was actually very short. He wasn't a very tall Singh, but he had immense bhakti. Like he did a lot of like job sub, like 50, 60 job subs a day. Mm-hmm. And he used to be in Maharaj. He used to work in Maharaj in the Langar Seva. Like that was his main Seva.
Okay.
So Maharaj sent Bajita Singh, and Bhai Bajita Singh was actually Bhai Uday Singh's brother.
Right.
So Bhai Bajita Singh said Satvachan, like he didn't even think about it. So he went on the horse with a huge spear, like a nagarin, like the spear that looks like almost like a snake's back that's crawling from like a bird's eye view.
Yeah.
Like a squiggly line spearhead. So he took that and just basically, as the elephant's running towards the fort, he's running to a full gallop towards the hathi, to the elephant. And in one strike, the spear goes through like four layers of plates on the forehead of the elephant. And then it stuns the elephant, right? Because it's stuck right in the middle of his head now. So the elephant now is stunned and kind of confused. And basically, you know, his whole, even though he was in a drunken testosterone-filled rage, right? So he's all confused now. So then he turns back and goes towards the Mughals and the Pahari Raja. And then he just basically causes havoc in their ranks. Like, how do you stop? Like, how do you contain the elephant now? Because not only have you made him drunk and he's testosterone-filled, he's covered in metal plates.
Yeah.
So now he's basically had, like, there's no way that the Pahari Raja and the Mughals can stop this elephant now. Mm. So the elephant does his thing for, like, a couple hours just going around, and nobody can contain it. And that elephant alone took out a lot of the Pahari Raja's forces and the Mughal forces. It basically fucked all their shit up.
Yeah.
So in that jung, one of the Pahari Raja's, his name was Kesari Chand, and he basically said that, I'm going to bring back Guru Gobind Singh Ji's head back to my kingdom. Mm-hmm. Right? And he basically, like, you know how before a battle people will yell shit out to each other from like different, like from opposite armies? Like, oh, I'm going to do this to you, I'm going to do that to you. So that's what Kesari Chand said.
Yeah.
And during that jung that happened, then there was a battle that ensued after that, after the elephant did its thing. Bayudhe Singh actually cut the head off Gesi Chand
Okay.
in that battle. Like, basically, he stuck his spear through his neck that his head just literally just ripped off. And Bayudhe Singh took that head and put on top of his spear and took it back to the Logar fort to show, like, the Sangat and Maharaj that, you know, this guy was saying he wants to take Guru Gobind Singh's head, and, well, we just fucking took his head off. So that was one of the jungs that happened. This is like 6-7 months before the siege of Anandapur. So the Pahari and Rajari are now Sirhind and now the Suba of Jalandhar, now they're now thinking, okay, and these Sikhs and this guru, we have to get rid of these guys now. So now the Muslims are starting to whisper towards Oranga, because they're like, we came with 100,000 to take out the Singhs at Logar, and we didn't even put a dent in them. It was actually the other way around. They rocked us. So there's no way we're going to have any type of victory over Guru Gobind Singh Ji and the Khalsa without Oranga's forces, which is like, if you think about the Mughal Empire at that time, they have 27% of the world's GDP. We've said that a lot in other podcasts, right? Just take that into account. 27% of the world's GDP. You have 0.25% of the whole world's GDP.
Yeah.
And at that time, the British Empire, the French Empire, the Spanish Empire, they were looting the Americas with like diamonds and gold. Mm-hmm. Africa too, right? Portuguese Empire, the Dutch Empire.
Right.
But even though that all these European countries were looting the world of its wealth, the Mughals still had 27% of the world's GDP. And that tells you why the British wanted to take over India too, because they knew there was a lot of wealth there. So Oranga having that much money and that many resources, plus he's allies with some, you know, a lot of the Islamic empires in the Middle East and stuff. There were a lot of like mercenaries that used to come to India to fight for Oranga's Mughal army. So you had like mercenaries from like Chechnya, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Iran, the whole like Ottoman Empire, Turkey, Northern Africa. You had like these Ethiopian mercenaries. Like people would come to India to fight. Like it was like, you know how now like Indians go to like Dubai or like the Middle East to work. Back then it used to be the other way around. It used to be the Middle Easterns and like Northern Africans and the people from like the Baltic states. You know, anybody who was like basically Muslim would come to the Mughal Empire for work because they know they'd be given good money, and they knew the Mughal Empire was looting a lot of people too. So whatever you could take in the loot, you could take home back home to wherever you're from.
Right.
So there were a lot of mercenaries in the Mughal Empire. So the Pahari and Ajay and Wazir Khan and the Jalandhar Suba, they had a meeting with Oranga at Aurangabad. And basically, they're basically trying to, it's almost like a business, you know, you're trying to get like investors, like a Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. They're like, you know, Guru Gobind Singh Ji and the Khalsa, they want revenge for, you know, you beheading Guru Tegh Bahadur Ji, and they're going to topple your takht, and they're going to take over Delhi, and they're going to destroy Islam. They're going to, you know, they're going to take over all of Northern India, you know, and all this. So Oranga was listening to all these like people, these Raja and the Subas, like talking like this. So he's like, okay, well, I'll give about 850,000 of my own forge, and then you guys have whatever 100, 150, 200,000 of your forge of wherever you can collect up there. So he's like, go talk to the Kashmiri Suba, go talk to, you know, the Tibetan people, the Suba up there, like all these people. He's like, get them involved too, so we can basically take Guru Sahib out. So that's what was the plan was. So you had all these Subas like that were against now Guru Gobind Singh Ji. So Like, who would have thought, like, even like the Himalayan Tibetan Sube up there, they were fighting against Guru Gobind Singh Ji. Even like the Kashmiri. So that kind of shows you like why Kashmir is like in such a turmoil, why Tibet can never get free from China. Like their Kadam that they did, they fought against Guru Gobind Singh Ji. Right? So you can see that that Kadam is still to this day fucking them up. So they got a forge ready. And it's basically then they start surrounding Anandpur Sahib because that's where Maharaj is. So that's where now the siege has begun. So with that siege, like it, whoever doesn't know what a siege is, basically you cut off all water, supplies, food, everything from an area. You basically surround it and cut everything off. So like the canals that were coming from the rivers going to Anandpur, they were all filled up by the Pahadi Gyan Raje. There was nothing going in and out of Anandpur Sahib now. There, it's basically totally cut off from the world. So basically what you try to do is you try to starve the people out and make them leave and make them come out. So that's what they were trying to do with Guru Gobind Singh Ji and the Khalsa there. So slowly, slowly, I mean, the rations started to kind of, dwindle. I mean, because you not only you got to feed people, you got to feed your horses, you got to feed, they had elephants in there too. They had, all this stuff, and there was a lot of the Anandpur Sahib was had quite a bit of Sangat in there too. So what the Singhs used to do, they used to do the kind of like suicide missions at night and go into like the camps of like the Pahadi Raji and the Mughals and steal their food and stuff and take it back inside, back to Anandpur Sahib. But a lot of every time they would do that, there would be Singhs who would become Shaheed during these little skirmishes, right? Because you would go in there, you would have to fight off people, take the stuff, and then get back to Anandpur Sahib safely. So a lot of Singhs actually got Shaheed just doing those suicide missions. But the Langar still kept going, even though, like, if it wasn't every day, like maybe a second day they would have like, one or two prashad days. So there was still a little bit of Langar going right now. And but the Singhs still, like, if you're a warrior, you still need that strength to fight and stuff. So when they would do these suicide missions, like they're fighting against like people who are well, people who are well nourished soldiers, and you're going in there grabbing their stuff and trying to fight them off. Not only that, your horses aren't well nourished either, so they can't run as fast either. So you have this kind of stuff that the Singhs are doing. The Singhs used to get really bad stomach aches too. So what they would do is they would tie their kamarkasa. So the case, it's almost like a parna that you tie in around your waist.
Like a knot.
Well, it's a bigger one. Like you see, like the Singhs wear like a big, huge. Imagine like just tying a parna around your waist, basically. They usually it's like orange or whatever. Like you'll see like in the paintings of.
The Gursikhs use the Kamar Kasi and Hazuriya as kind of pillows and fabric at Chamkor, which we'll get into later, right?
Yeah, basically that's all they had. So they would tie their kamarkasa really tight so they wouldn't feel the pain on their stomach. So they would like really, really just like tie it, because when your stomach is in that much pain, or if it's like empty, just but with gravity with it hanging out, or like just with no support, the pain is quite a bit. So you need to kind of keep everything intact, like your intestines and your stomach, just like nicely in a tight bunch, so you don't feel that pain. So that's what they used to do. They used to tie their kamarkasa. So not only do you have Singhs here, but you have like regular Sangat. So you have kids, ladies, Bibiyan, Bujorg. You have like all these people, and a lot of people, and they're all going through this, and they're going through this hunger phase. That's one of the things that you gotta, like, how we were joking around about being buzzkills or whatever, but these are the kind of things you kind of look at during this time. We kind of gorge ourselves with these fucking potlucks and stuff during Christmas with family, which is great. I mean, you get together with family, that's great, but you know, when we're gorging ourselves and stuff, we should think about what the Sikh Sangha that was going through during this time. Right? Like they were basically starving. Not only them, like their horses and stuff. So now the Pahari and Aji and the Mughals are like, man, these things, they're starving, but they're not like completely starving because they keep stealing our stuff. So basically now they sent out spies to like all of the little villages all around Anandpur Sahib now, saying that if you see anywhere that looks like a Sikh or like has any type of, you know, kakar or wearing blue barna or whatever, that you have to let us know that we'll basically arrest them, like no questions asked. So there's a lot of spies all over the place. So now as things are doing these suicide missions, they're getting into more and more skirmishes, and like what they would do is like they would take a couple guys with muskets with them and then a couple guys with swords. So as they're escaping, they would use the guys with muskets as cover fire. And what the Mughal officers were saying, like, it's like the Sikhs don't lose their target at all. Like, we would, you know, we'll be on full fledged horseback running behind them. And then from nowhere, somebody would get a headshot off. And it's like their aim is like impeccable. And usually, you know, if you have like a very strong mind, or if you have a lot of bhakti or a lot of simran, that usually your mind doesn't waver. So when you're targeting, especially with a gun, when you're using targets, like you need to be very, very in focus, and like almost like you have to slow down time, right?
Right.
And that's what the Sikhs are really good at. And the Mughals are like, we've never seen anybody shoot guns like that. Like, they've seen so many different mercenaries. They've seen people from all over the world. But people, what with Sikhs, when they fire, like, it's like they have a different, they're like at a different level. So that's what the Sikhs would be using. They'd be using Sikhs with muskets as cover fire as the other Sikhs would try to get away. So there was a batch of Sikhs that went to get supplies, but they never told Guru Gobind Singh Ji. So they never got Agya. So they never did Binti. But they just went, and all those Sikhs got Shaheed. So the Sikhs, you know, went to Guru Gobind Singh Ji and told Guru Gobind Singh Ji, yeah, we had a jatha of Sikhs that just went to grab stuff. And then Maya said, well, they should have came to us before they left, right? I mean, why are they doing manmarjiyan, basically? Like, you need hukam to go and do that kind of stuff. And all those Sikhs were taken out. So Maharaj was kind of like, you know, they made a mistake of doing that. Like, they should have not done like their own thinking and like, okay, Koina, we'll be heroes and do this. But then Mara's like, Chal, Koina, you know, they're still my kids, right? And he's like, and then he told the whole Sangha, he's like, it's important that you guys don't do what you guys want to do. He's like, every one of you guys' life is important. So I don't want you guys just making plans on your own and just leaving. So that was one warning that Maharaj gave to everybody in the Sangha. So as the months are going by, less and less food, less and less langar. People are starving. The horses are starving. You can see their ribs. The elephant that the Bhim Chand wanted to take, that special elephant, he's basically starving too now. Like, and for like a Sikh to see their horse starve is a really hard thing, right? Because that connection between the Khalsa and the horse, right? So the Sikhs are like doing Bainti to Maharaj, and Maharaj, you know, give us faith and strength that we don't leave you. Like, this is like getting hard now. It's hard to see everybody starving. So now people are really, really feeling it. And then that's where you get the Chali Mukte, right? The Chali Mukte that left Anandpur Sahib after basically writing the Vadawa and signing it, basically a contract saying that Guru is not our Guru anymore. We're not Sikh anymore. So that's where you got, actually, there was actually 300 people that were ready to go, but only 40 left. The rest, their conscience didn't basically, at the last minute, they said, no, we're going to stay. So you're seeing all this now. So the psyche of a lot of the Sangha is like, okay, now we're starving to death because there's kids, there's women, there's older people, animals. So now a lot of the psyche of the Sangha is like, okay, we're basically either gonna die in here or we're gonna die out there.
Yeah. I think there's a line from Gurbani. I'm paraphrasing here. I think Guru Nanak Dev Ji says, there's the pain of separation, there's also the pain of hunger, or something like that.
Yeah, that hunger is like the hunger to have like darshan of Guru Sahib, right? Or like have like the blessing of Maharaj.
Gotcha. Okay.
That pyaas or that hunger that's what you Maharaj is usually referring to that in Gurbani. Like that Bairag, people have Bairag, right?
Yeah.
Like they have tears in their eyes, like when they just even think of Guru. Or they read Gurbani, right? Because they have that hunger to have the blessings of Guru Sahib or that love for Maharaj. So, yeah, so the Sangat is now kind of like, okay, what are we going to do? So, this is where now the Pahari Raja and the Mughals are now thinking that these guys are not going to quit, right? Like, we've basically, it's been 9 months now. And these things, they know, like the Pahari Raja know, and the Mughals know how much food is in there. There's like nothing in there now. But these people are not giving up. So that's where they came and tried to basically do a negotiation with Maharaj, saying that if you leave, we'll give you safe passage. And we'll give you Sangat's safe passage and all your carts and stuff with all everything we won't touch. And then the Muslims swore on the Quran, and the Pahari Raja swore on the Gau Mata. And
And I think Guru Gobind Singh Ji warned his Sikhs, like, don't have faith in their swearing on their Quran. But I think the Sikhs were like, no, but we're starving though. We're gonna die here anyways.
Yeah, so Mara said, so the whole Sangat, so the Panch Pyare, right? Panch Pyare, they were kind of like, the Maharaj, maybe we should take this, this whatever treaty or negotiation that they're trying to do, maybe we should just take it, right? Because look at the Sangat, they're all starving. Look at the kids, they're all like almost dead.
Yeah.
And Mara said, like you said, Mara said, do you really want to trust their faith? Do you trust them or no? Right. And then what they did was actually they sent a couple of carts out, and then Pahari Raja attacked the carts. And Mara said, look at that. I mean, do you really trust these guys? But still, the Sangha's like, John, maybe they were just going after the Maya in the carts, right? Maybe they're just going after they thought maybe there were jewels, but it was all garbage and shit. They're like, maybe they won't touch us. Maybe they were just going after the loot.
Yeah.
And then Mara said, look, if you guys hold off just a little bit more, I'll give you Raj all over India.
Oh, wow.
And then the Sangat again said, no, Maharaja, we can't. Let's
Oh.
just take one. Yeah, Guru Gobind Singh gave those budgets to the Khalsa, man.
I can't believe that. Oh, my God.
Yeah. He said, Mara said, if you just hold up just a little bit more, I'll give you Raj everywhere. All over India, wherever you guys, whatever takat you guys want, we'll put it up for you. And again, like it's like the mo Monday morning quarterback as a Sangat. Then, like you're starving for 9 months, what do? If like Guru Sahib says, hey, just hold off like another 3 months, don't worry. Like, but you're already like you're already seeing people starving. And not only that, you saw the Charlie Singh's leave too. So you might think, okay, now people might start to leave now. Right? So the Sangha just been thinking, I mean, Maharaj, please, can we just, let's just go. And they swore on their Quran and their Gau Mata, let's just go. And the Maharaj said, okay, if that's what you guys want, okay, let's do it then. Again, Maharaj, Guru Sahib never hankar, there was no, it's my hukam, we must do this. If the Sangat, if the Khalsa Panth said it, Maharaj said, okay, if you guys want to, right? So as now they're leaving Anandapur Sahib, then all we all know what happens then, right? Then everybody gets attacked. So as they're leaving, the Bahadur Raja and the Mughal forces attack the Sangat leaving. What the Sikhs did was, as they had Singhs lined up on both sides of the Sangat, and the Sangat would be in the middle. So they would have like a almost like a caravan of people leaving, but there would be Singhs on both sides, rows of Singhs on both sides that would protect the Sangat. So yeah, as the Pahadiyan Raja and the Mughal forces attacked the Sangat, the Singhs fought them off.
Yeah.
Right.
I think by Ajit Singh and by Uday Singh were at the back, right?
Yeah. So Baba Ji Singh and Baba Ji Singh and by Uday Singh, they were fighting in the back. And they made sure that there was no attack from the rear. And so they basically enslaved the Sangat, and the Singhs would be on the out. So basically that way they could insulate the Sangat to go towards the river, to cross the river.
Yeah. And somewhere in the middle was Mata Gujri and the Chhote Sahibs, are they on a horse?
Yeah. So they were basically just right beside Guru Gobind Singh Ji, but there was so much turmoil happening that there was separation that happened by the river.
Right.
Because if you think about it, and then you have that many Singhs, like obviously, like a lot of the Sangat got killed even before they got to Sarsa, man, before they got to the river.
Mm.
They didn't take any prisoners.
Yeah.
Like it didn't matter if you were a Bujorg or if you were young, like they just killed you. So they're now going towards the river, Sarsa, and that day the river was flooded. And it's like a torrential rain too. So the river is totally flooded, and it's like literally like you know those videos we saw from Pakistan flood?
Yeah. Imagine like you're starving, it's dark, it's freezing, and you're what, like damp. Like just imagine the discomfort.
Yeah.
In our cars, we have like heated seats and like everything, like all the pleasures of the world, man. Like that would have been just hell.
We're sitting in front of the fire.
Yeah.
Eggnog, we got it all. Drinking eggnog with vodka in it.
Damn, with man.
Santa sweater and our Santa socks.
Yeah, doing
tech coach bullshit. You know, if you want to be successful.
Yeah.
So the Sangat now going towards the river, and this huge turmoil now. Like, it's just chaos. Mm-hmm. Like people are, Singhs are fighting, Singhs are becoming Shaheed, Singhs are trying to protect the Sangat, Sangat is getting killed. Like you said, there was rain, dark, wet, muddy, like it was just crazy. And everybody's trying to get to the river now. And then when they get to the river, they see the halat of the river. It's like, how the hell do we cross this now? Like it's like those Pakistani floods that we saw a couple months back.
Yeah.
Like that. It's like, how do we cross this? Like if we try to cross this, we're gonna be swept away. So the Sangat gets to the riverbank and they're thinking, okay, now where do we go now? We have to cross, because behind us the Singhs are fighting the Pahadiyan Raja and the Mughals, and they're keeping them at bay. So a lot of Shahidiyan happened just to get to the Sarsa River. A lot of Shahidiyan happened. And again, 9 months basically going through starvation. You know, with the grace of the Guru, the Singhs put up a really good fight. They kept the Pahadiyan Raja and the Mughal forces at bay. And so Bhai Uday Singh, Baba Ji Singh, Bhai Bajitar Singh, you know, all these things, even, you know, Pai Jetaji, the one that took Maharaja Sis from Chandani Chowk to Anandpur Sahib. So after they took Amrit, their name became Pai Jeevan Singh.
Mm-hmm.
And they were fighting on that river, Sarsa River too,
yeah,
alongside everybody. So Pai Jeevan Singh Ji, they're all fighting. So everybody's just trying to keep everybody at bay so the Sangat can cross properly.
Yeah. I think Bayo Day Singh was in a battle for like 5 hours or something.
Yeah, he fought. He was like Rambo, man.
Yeah.
Like just Bayo Day Singh, like if you talk about him, he was probably one of the greatest warriors in Madai's army. Like he could horseback riding, swordsmanship, spear, arrow, everything. Like he was like a Rambo.
Yeah.
And he was keeping everybody at bay. And like you said, for 6-7 hours, he kept him and his Jatha of Singhs. Basically, before Bayu Day Singh went there, he got Agya from Guru Gobind Singh Ji. Maharaj told him, you know, you're gonna come back 4 times to be a great general in the Sikh Panth.
Yeah.
That I'm so happy with your seva. Right, you're gonna be like a raja every time you come. Like you could, the sangat will literally follow you. Like you're like a great general. Mata said he'll come back 4 times to do that seva. So, Bayo Day Singh and his Jatha of Singhs, basically, they went. They knew that their shahidi was gonna happen, but their main focus was to keep everybody at bay. And Bhai Jeevan Singh Ji got shahid at in that area too, on the banks of Sarsa.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of great, you know, Singhs, right, that we know through history got shaheed even before the Sangat could cross Sarsa, just so the Sangat could, you know, cross without being attacked. So Bayu Day Singh, like you said, 6-7 hours, just shit-kicking the hell out of the Pahariya Raja. And the Mughal forces, like Bayu Day Singh and his Singhs, like they were like, a lot of them were shot 20, 25 times and by muskets, but they were still fighting. Yeah. A lot of them had their hat. There was like Mughal accounts saying like their eyes would be like shot out and like their half their head would be shot off, but they were still fighting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like their arm would be cut off, but they'd still be fighting. Like their limbs would be gone, but whatever limb they had that could hold a city sab would still be fighting.
Wow.
They're like, literally, it was like trying to put down lions. Like, how do you put down a lion? It's very hard to put down a lion, right? So they kept everybody at bay, and Bayu Day Singh got shaheed there. But for 5-7 hours, they took out a lot of Pahariya Raja and Mughals. They were describing Bayu Day Singh as like almost like he was almost like a freaking demigod, man, on the battlefield. Like, he'd be pierced by arrows, but it wouldn't faze him. He'd be shot by a musket, would not faze him. Like, his jorah was all covered in red. Like, he was just red. Mm-hmm. But he was like a saw, man. Like, you know, like a huge saw blade and just fucking cutting down whatever came in front of him.
Yeah.
So Bayu Day Singh got shaheed there, along with Bhai Jeevan Singh Ji, who was Bhai Jetha Ji. And now, and Baba Ji Singh was fighting alongside Bayu Day Singh for a little bit, and then he went to Guru Gobind Singh Ji because Bayu Day Singh and the Singh said, Baba Ji, you leave. Like, there's no need for your shahidi here. But go to Maharaj and do Bainti there and see what you got to do. Because there's no point in you fucking, you know, fighting alongside us, right? And who knows what the Panth will need after this kind of thing.
Bayu Day Singh was one of the sons of Bhai Mani Singh, right?
Yeah. So Bhai Vijay Singh, Bhai Uday Singh, Bhai Mani Singh's whole family, like there was like 15, 17 people just within their family, man.
Yeah.
That got shaheed in some way or another. So Bhai Mani Singh had a very, very great family.
Lineage,
yeah, and not only them, like they themselves were a great shaheed, right?
Yeah.
So now, basically, now Maharaj Guru Gobind Singh Ji, Baba Ji Singh, Baba Ji Jar Singh, and the Singhs, they cross the river, but because of the turmoil, Gangu, who was the cook, right? Not only that, Gangu, we all know that he betrayed the Shorty Sahib Jate and Mataji. He's the one that took him in to the Mughals. He was actually part of the crew of the Kashmiri Pandits that came to Guru Tegh Bahadur Ji. So he was part of that Jatha that came and did Bainti to Maharaj.
Wow, what a snake.
Yeah, I mean, fucking, he's basically Gandhi's fucking great-great-great-grandpa, basically. Like, you can say that.
Yeah.
Like, Pahadi and Ajay, all that, they're all fucking all cut from the same fucking cloth, man. Chandu, Suchananda, all these assholes, right? Anyways. So, because there's so much turmoil, so much confusion, Gangu and Mataji and the shortest Abdul, they get separated from the 40-year-old Singhs that are with Guru Gobind Singh Ji. They, Maharaj crossed at one point of the river, and then Gangu and Mataji and the shortest Abdul, they crossed at another point of the river. So now with Maharaj, there are only about, what, 44-odd Singhs now with Maharaj, including the Vadde Sahibzade. So think about how much of the Sangat got Shaheed just to cross the river. Right? If you think about at Anandpur, the Sangat could have been maybe, what, 5,000 strong?
Yeah.
So now you got 44 only that crossed with Maharaj. And then you had Gangu and with the Shorte Sahaja and Mataji. So look at how many Shahidiyan happened just leaving Anandpur Sahib to get to Sarsa. Like, that's a lot, man.
Yeah. I was looking at a map of the Sarsa. It's like a, it's a narrow river, but it's super long. Like, it's got a lot of, it would take time to cross it.
Well, that was a problem with the river, right? Because the banks were narrow, and then when it flooded, you didn't know what the hell was what underneath.
Yeah, it was long and winding, for sure.
So there was, like the separate...
like, it's a, I mean, it's, first of all, it's a river, dude. Like, imagine crossing a river, like, while being attacked at night, rain. Just, like, pure hell, dude.
Yeah, basically. Just pure chaos, man. Getting attacked by people who literally are not going to take you as a prisoner.
Yeah.
Right? So, just to that point, man, look how much Shahidiya happened. And not only to that point, so that whole Sangat, they're also very, they're starving.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, that Sangat, they lost a lot of people even before that. They lost, look at all the things they got Shaheed just to do the suicide missions to get supplies.
Yeah.
So this is all during that time. So now we know that Mataji and the Shorte Sahaja, they go to Gangu's burned. I don't want to say the name because it feels, it's filthy. It's a filthy fucking thing to say. Even just Gangu's fucking name. You know, how can you, like, look at Gangu's history, man. Literally, Guru Tegh Bahadur saved his ass.
Yeah.
And then Guru Gobind Singh kept him in as a cook there. Right? Didn't have to pay for anything. He gave him everything he needed. Right? Then he does this to the Shorte Sahaja and Mataji.
Yeah.
First, he wanted to steal whatever Mataji had in her. Like, she had a sack of, like, stuff, like, yeah, her belongings.
Yeah, so yeah. She
thought it was, like, gold. But what is Mataji? She's like a Mahapurak Brahmin. What is she going to really have? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's thinking of stealing that from her first. Then she kind of says, what are you doing? Like, because she kind of caught him trying to do that shit. And she's like, mm-hmm. Gangu, what the hell are you doing, man? And then, basically, because Mataji questioned him about trying to steal that stuff, he ratted a Shorte Sahaja than Mataji up.
Wow, yeah. What a snake.
You know what, historically, man? Like, our Katha Vajaks and stuff, a lot of them like to blame the Mughals for a lot of shit. But man, if you look at the Pahadiyan Ajay, Gangu, Chandu, Suchanand, like, they come from a certain area, a certain fucking sect.
Yeah,
I would say they I don't even say they would. They come from the full on other, because they break it up in caste systems, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They come from a certain that Brahmin of freaking mindset. But they use the Mughals as the sword hand. Mm-hmm. Like the Pahari and Raji, they went to Aranga and asked for help.
Yeah.
They couldn't do shit themselves because they got their asses kicked. So it's like, I don't know why a lot of Kathavajis don't like to fucking say that shit, man. Like, we like to say, oh, Mughalane Akita, Mughalane Akita. But man, you know, those Brahmins fucking, they were the biggest snakes, man, against us.
Yeah, they preyed on the vulnerable, like in that situation especially.
Yeah, but then there were also a lot of people, a lot of other Brahmins that helped us, like Dordarman, who paid for the Sabjades and Mataji's Antam Sanskar area.
Yeah.
With gold coins, right?
And there was a Muslim that was, you know, when Bachitar Singh was wounded in that battle of Sarsa, his body was taken to a local Muslim's house, and the Muslim actually...
Yeah.
And I think he had a daughter named like Mumtaz or something.
Yeah, so Baba Ji Singh Ji took him to that area because basically Bhai Bachitar Singh was mortally wounded. Like he was basically bleeding out.
Yeah.
So Baba Ji Singh dropped him off in that area where he knew that there were some Muslims that were Sanghis or did Sangha with Gobind Singh Ji.
Yeah.
So that Muslim family took him in. And then basically they put Bhai Bachitar Singh in a room. And the family had a daughter too, like that was like 2021. So when the Mughals came there, they saw like the kind of blood on the floor and horse prints, right? So they went to the house and they said, "Is anybody here from, you know, from basically the Sikhs or any of them there?" The dad said, "No, nobody's here," right? And then the Mughals are like, "Okay, let me search your house." So the room where Bhai Bachitar Singh was in, it was closed, right? The door was shut. Yeah. And basically Mumtam was in there trying to seal Bhai Bachitar Singh's wound with like stitches.
Yeah.
And giving him dod and stuff, right? Just to see if he's gonna survive here. And then what the father said was,
the Muslim householder's name was Kotla Nahang Khan.
Yeah, I think that's they named that an area now too. Now,
oh, okay,
I believe. He said, "Well, my daughter's in there with her husband, right? They're so within Muslim law, like you don't kind of, you know, do that kind of
yeah. You can't interrupt
privacy, right?" So, my daughter's there with her husband, right? So the Mughals say, "Okay, chal koi na, we'll leave you guys alone then," right? Because he thought, you know, guys, these guys are Muslims, and they're not going to house, you know, Guru Sikh, right? But these Muslims were very, they're premis of Guru Gobind Singh Ji. So the Mughals left. And then... So basically, after Bhai Bachitar Singh got shaheed, right? Because of his wound. But the daughter told her father, now she's like, "I'm never going to get married again. Sorry, I'm not going to get married now." Because she wasn't married yet. So she's like, "I'm not getting married." And then the father said, "Oh, why not?" Basically, she's like, "You said Bhai Bachitar Singh was my husband." She's like, "I'm going to keep my word now till my death."
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think there's a Gurdwara, Bibi Mumtaz. I think, like you said, I think there might be a Gurdwara, Bibi Mumtaz, in that area, if I'm not mistaken. But about respect for that family, right? So now we know what the Chhote Sahibzade there are now with Gangu, and that shit happens where Gangu becomes a little bitch, and he rats out Mataji and the Chhote Sahibzade. That's still, I don't know, man. It's still just, ugh. Anyways, so the Chhote Sahibzade, I think,
right, there is a Gurdwara, Yadkar Bibi Mumtaz Sahib.
Okay, yeah.
In Roper, Punjab.
Yeah. It's a lot of respect for that Mataji, right? Mumtaz, who kept her word and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was Muslim, man. She wasn't even sick.
Yeah, yeah.
She's better than fucking probably 95% of us, man. I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry. Your Santa Claus sweater is all right. Buzzkill Podcast brought to you by Buzz Killington. And yeah, so now the birthday sahaja, they go with Guru Gobind Singh Ji and the 40 Singhs, and they go to Chamkor Sahib and they set up basically their stance to fight the pursuing Mughal Pahari and Raja forces with the mercenaries from all over the fucking world.
So the question, this fortress at Chamkor, was it like a random fortress they found, or was it somebody's house?
So yeah, so it was like a small little mansion that was walled off, basically, man.
Yeah.
And the owner of that mansion was the Sangat of Guru Gobind Singh Ji.
Okay.
So he said, Maharaj, you can, whatever you need, just use it, whatever, for whatever you need. So that's what the Singhs use as a last stance.
Right.
Stand. And we'll get into that into the next episode, because then there's a lot of little snippets in that, because there's a lot of information that we just gave right now, right? But I just want to see, like, kind of get your point of view, like last week we talked about how for the longest time we didn't even realize historically what happened during this month. Like, we were never told by our parents.
Yeah.
And now that we know, like, how much sharam we feel that we lived so many years of our lives not giving a shit. And just reading and just discussing what the Sangat went through, what Maharaj went through, what the Sahabjad they went through, all the Shahidiyan, all the hardships. And we complain about the stupidest shit. Not only that, we didn't even think about their Qurbaniya or Shahidiyan or what hard stuff they went through.
That's right. Yeah. We'll talk
about Charlie Mukte too next episode. But I just want to see what your opinion is on all this.
I learned about these things relatively recently, right? Maybe in the last 4 or 5 years. And like we discussed, right? I didn't know this history back in the day. I think part of it is, as the generations pass and we have kids, it's our responsibility to pass on these stories to people, like to our children, to the next generation. You have to. Otherwise, you basically lose your history. You know, that includes not only like the stories of our gurus, but also, you know, our language and stuff too. It's crucial because, especially people living in Western society, the risk is that we lose our identity, right? As time goes on and on and on. It's our duty. Like, we have a duty to pass these stories on.
Yeah.
And the sacrifices our gurus made it's incomparable. Guru Tegh Bahadur Sahib, being beheaded, losing your limbs, being paralyzed. It's like the worst thing that can happen to someone. And our guru went through that for us, for another faith, but, for us too, right? So the sacrifices are incomparable. There's nothing that compares to it. Yeah, like, it's funny because, I knew about Jesus, Jesus' story, right? Like, that Jesus was on the cross and whatnot. But then it wasn't until, you get a little older that you learn about Guru Tegh Bahadur Sahib and, the Sahibzade and all these things.
Yeah, you know what, man? You know what's fucked, bro? Like, our parents would talk about, like, Jesus and shit, and, like, on the TV, they would have like those Christian movies on when I was, I look back now, I'm like, I don't want to judge my mom and dad, right? Whatever it happened, but damn, like, fuck. Seriously.
Yeah, I like, with, for me, I was taught about Guru Nanak Dev Ji, And like, you know, I was lucky, like my parents taught me Moon Month or stuff, but these, there's so many stories that I didn't know until relatively recently. I didn't know about this, about Guru Gobind Singh Ji or the Sahibs, Adi Guru Tegh Bahadur Ji, all these other stories are critical. Like, these are absolutely essential for us to know. I didn't know these until much later.
And, yeah. I only started really knowing the nitty gritty probably maybe in my early 20s, man.
But you know what, man? Even if you look today at, people our age, if you ask them, you know what? I mean, it's not, I'm not trying to compare here, but it's unfortunate. A lot of people still don't know details about our history. Like, if you ask them to name our 10 gurus, they can name Guru Nanak Dev, they can name Guru Gobind Singh, that's it. Right? They don't really know much else. It's really sad.
Yeah,
I don't want to say the words, but they're, you know, a lot of them are in that Dilsof crew, right? They don't need to know that depth of the history.
But why are the Sikhs like that? Because when you look at Muslims and stuff, they know their shit about their dharma, man.
Oh, Muslims, dude. Muslims, yeah, knowledge about their dharma is, yeah, it's hardcore. You gotta admire that.
But our Qurban, the Qurbani we have, were not that long ago. And the Qurbani that our Maharaj did were so pure, out of so much purity.
You know why? One of the reasons why we're lucky as Sikhs is that our faith is relatively new. There are so many ways it's our history. You know, to the non-believers that always say, there's no proof of this or that. We've got so much, man. We have other texts. There's a Mughal text that talk about the Sikhs, like you mentioned. You know, those are the most objective and unbiased historical texts when your enemies are writing about you.
Yeah.
Right? It's not self-serving. Like, I can write my own thing. These are other people from other faiths writing about Sikhs. So
I got into a debate, man, over this with somebody, what you just said. It was a white guy.
Yeah.
And he was a historian or whatever. I think I forgot. I think it was on Twitter or I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's I read about the Balachim Kaur. He's there's no way that there was a million Mughal forces. It was probably maybe 1,000 or maybe 2,000. It's just exaggerated by the Sikhs. And what we explain is that the mercenaries and the different Subas, and if you add up all that shit together, you can easily get a million forces right there.
Uh-huh.
Right. So I could have easily said, blah 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 blah, whatever I just told you right now, right? But then he had a picture, so I'm like, fuck it, you know what? I'm gonna low blow this motherfucker. Mm-hmm. So he had a picture of a Spartan helmet on his display pick, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's, especially white people, they don't have any history to themselves, so they grab onto anything. They fucking grab onto Mediterranean history, which is whatever, right? And these are Anglo-Saxons. So he had a Spartan helmet. And people think that, Spartans were the best warriors, and they were so hardcore. They're manly, this and that.
Yeah,
because of 300, because they're all... But people don't even know, man. I did research on Spartans, and I read about them and stuff. They used to freaking... pleasure themselves backdoor shenanigans amongst each other for camaraderie, man.
Okay. Yeah.
These are the great warriors you're fucking talking about. Mm-hmm. And you're questioning our history.
Right.
So I said that to him. I gave him a link and I gave him historical fucking this is why you're nothing. He never responded. You guys think you just because you have a Spartan helmet on your display pick or on your truck or whatever, you think you're hardcore. These are what your warriors used to do. They used to, fudge pack each other for camaraderie, man. No wonder they were so ripped. They wanted to look good for each other.
Yeah, these, I mean, these Twitter battles, man. People try to, like, yeah, I think it comes out of jealousy that these people will try to criticize Sikh history or any other dharm, right? Any other great warrior sect, they'll try to, or faith or people, they'll just try to criticize it on any grounds that they can.
Well, these lolos are idiots because when you Google the bravest community in the world, our Sikhs come up as number one.
Up, yeah, that's actually, there's been more than a few lists that talk about the Sikhs.
The greatest generals, Hari Singh Nalwa, greatest kings, Ranjit Singh.
Yeah, slowly as, you know, as time goes on, people are learning to appreciate the sacrifices the Sikhs made. But, you know, what I will say is that I still don't think that Guru Gobind Singh Ji gets enough credit around sacrifices. Yeah. I forgot which general, like some British guy. He was like a great historian, but he was like, you know, he told some, he wrote in a book that if more people knew about Guru Gobind Singh Ji, he was like, you know, everyone would convert and take Amrit. If people actually knew about Guru Gobind Singh Ji's, what he did. Because there's really nobody like him in history.
No.
Right? I'll go on a limb and say Guru Gobind Singh Ji does not get enough credit. No, like people don't know about Guru Gobind Singh Ji enough. It's kind of sad. I sometimes think people, especially in Britain, know more about Maharaj Ranjit Singh than know about the sacrifices of Guru Gobind Singh Ji. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you because Maharaj Ranjit Singh has some fucking skeleton in his closet too, right?
Yeah,
like there are some, like, you know, right? Historically, if you look at, yeah, he was a good king and all that, but like you said,
I wouldn't call Maharaj Ranjit Singh a sant or a mahapurakh. I would I don't think I think people need to learn about Guru Gobind Singh Ji's story, man. It needs to be like sent to every part of the world.
You're right, man. And you know what? You just even within our community, within the Sikhs, a lot of people don't dive into Guru Gobind Singh Ji's Jeevan Sakhi.
Yeah, you know what? I actually like when people, like when Gore asked me about what Vaisakhi is, because it gives me a chance to educate people about Guru Gobind Singh Ji as much as I can. You know how the people just say, oh, it's a harvest festival? It's such a low blow. Like that, it is such a shitty answer to the question. I'm sorry. It is the shittiest answer you can give.
I always shit on the fucking, when you know when the Canucks make the Vaisakhi jersey?
Oh, God.
Always shit on it, man. I'm like, this is bullshit. There should be swords. There should be kande. There should be everything. What's up with this? No, sorry, not Vaisakhi.
I went to the Diwali
one.
Well, that's even with Diwali, they just say it's a celebration of lights, but no one goes in depth of what it really is. You know, no one talks about Guru Har Gobind Sahib or anything. But I think, you know, the people that are listening, I call on you guys, you know, when somebody asks you what Vaisakhi is about, like if your white coworkers ask you, don't just give a cop-out answer like it's the harvest festival. Please don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Educate yourselves and talk about Guru Gobind Singh Ji. Please. Oh, I
totally agree with you, man. Out of my experience, right? So I've worked out in like the rural areas of Alberta.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, people say, oh, the rednecks, this and that. And I've told people about Guru Gobind Singh Ji, and they are so impressed.
Yeah.
They are so impressed with Guru Gobind Singh Ji, man.
How could you not? I feel like it's a story that you know, we should. I know we're not supposed to feel like proud, you know, and have that pride, but it's something it's a story that should be told. I think any opportunity you get to tell Guru Gobind Singh Ji's stories, use it.
I honestly personally feel there's nothing wrong with being proud of your guru.
Right. Yeah, sure.
I feel like that's one thing in life that you can show pride in without any bop, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're so proud and so enamored by your guru, like I think that's one thing our Panth needs, man. We should be like have our chest out, our head. The only reason why our head, we can have, hold our head up high with our dastar and have our chest out and have any arnak, any delay is because of Guru Gobind Singh Ji.
Yeah.
Other than that, we like, again, look at the history of Punjab. It was an area that was constantly conquered and just toppled and raped and pillaged. Our gurus slammed the door shut from the Middle East into India. They're the ones that slammed the door shut. Before then, it was open game, man.
Yeah, I mean, we fought back. We applied that pressure back. One of the only people who did it.
And if you look at historically too, like Punjab, even to this day, well, now Pakistan is made, but the border of Punjab to Pakistan is basically where the Middle Eastern Islamic influence ends. It's us. We were the wall.
You know how some people say they only follow Guru Nanak to Guru Arjan Dev Ji Sikhi? They don't follow anything here. But if it wasn't for Guru Arjan Dev Ji's, bunching to Guru Hargobind Sahib to, take arms, we probably, we wouldn't be here today, I don't think.
No, we would be going to the masjid. India would be a totally different. It would have been a caliphate, man.
Yeah.
We stopped that caliphate from happening. There would be no Hindu Dharma. It would just be, the Middle East would have just seeped right into India, and India would have been part of, it would have been called Mughalistan. That was the name that they wanted to make it, Mughalistan. And it would have been, that would have been the name. But people don't give a fuck. They like to forget that shit, especially other Tharms too, who we saved. They don't give a shit about that. They have some weird fake Daleri Ankh that they don't fucking even deserve to have. I'm sorry. Guru Gobind Singh Ji is the reason. Guru Tegh Bahadur Ji is the reason.
You know what? Another thing? I talked to some Hindu colleagues who had no idea about Guru Tegh Bahadur's sacrifice for the Kashmiri Pandits.
Oh my fucking God. Fuck my...
They have no idea.
Are you fucking... Oh my God.
If you have any Hindu colleagues, ask them about whether they know about Guru Tegh Bahadur's Shahidi and why they did it. They'll have no clue. Now, I'm not saying nobody knows about it. It's very uncommon, especially here.
And they're trying to wash it out through the textbooks and historically, man, in India.
You know, the sad thing is actually, colleagues, whenever I try to talk about Sikhism, or even if I, say that, I went to the Gurdwara or wherever, they'll bring up Guru Nanak Dev Ji, and they'll always just have to slip in there. You know what I'm about to say. They always got to just slip in there that Guru Nanak Dev Ji was born into a Hindu family. They just have to like throw that in, right? they have to do it, man. Do it as a social experiment. Just, talk to a Hindu about Sikhi and see what you think is
going on. One girl, this is the fuck, this was like back in the day, man. One girl did say that to me. And remember how I was back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't even know if I want to fucking say it, man. Basically, I told her to shut up, and then I used a couple other words after that.
I
don't know. I just got triggered, man. She got me. This is like right after high school, so. That was, you remember the old G.
The old G. But, I can't say I blame you for having that sort of reaction. I mean, it is what it is.
When it comes to our gurus, I'm very sensitive. When people try to, maybe that's bad though.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. That's why I think it's, we have a duty when people, Vaisakhi happens every year. There's a huge mela, even in Western Canada, right? It's an opportunity for us to educate people, man. Don't give a cop-out quick answer. Explain it properly what it is. Please, it's our duty almost to do it.
Yeah, like you have to explain. It's like it's a Nagar Kirtan. What's a Nagar Kirtan? Why do we do Nagar Kirtan? Why the Guru Granth Sahib is there? Why Maharaj did the first Amar Singh Chaud? What does it represent? Because it represents a huge thing that the world has never seen, man.
Yep.
And people just, oh, it's a festival of where the harvest comes in and we do Bhangra.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's not even in the same ballpark, dude. I don't know, man.
That's like, the pagan ship that's pre-Guru Nanak, though.
Yeah.
They pray to the harvest gods and they dance around a fire. That's what it is. Bhangra.
I remember at my old place of work, right? One of my Punjabi coworkers, I guess he brought in like sweets for everyone. And he sent an email. Like, you know when you send an email to like the whole, like to everyone? Like the whole branch or whatever. You can do. And basically he's like, you know, happy Vaisakhi to everyone. And he very briefly explained, he's like, we're celebrating the harvest festival. And I was like, fuck, this is not it. That's not accurate at all, right? And I don't know. I wasn't going to like, you know, reply all and correct him. Cause I don't know. I didn't want to be like douchey. Maybe what I could have done is just like talk to him, you know, privately and told him, hey, this is actually what it's about. But yeah, it's annoying. There's a lot of people, the Punjabis our age that don't know. Remember that famous Vaisakhi video? That's too much. Right? Everybody knows that video. It's out there, man. Right? There's a lot of those people out there.
You know what? I would love to talk to that guy and just with like a pure heart, with just out of pure love from brother to brother, just explain everything to him.
Yeah. Oh, that guy, wherever you are out there, my man, it's okay. You're not alone.
Yeah. And if you want to talk, man, our doors are open, man. And you know what? Another thing, you know, let's play devil's advocate here. Okay, like that guy that everybody says festival of fucking harvest or whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's those people that aren't Amritari.
Yeah.
Right? Or have it. Let's say that they're Mone. Me being an ex-Mona, I can talk shit now. Is it them kind of feeling bad saying, thinking to themselves, okay, now this Vaisakhi is actually about the first Amrit Singh Chaud working Amrit. But how can I explain that to people? And when Gore say, hey, where's your case, Dadi and Kakars? Yeah, why the fuck are you celebrating it? Do you think that's the reason why they kind of go the harvest route? As a Mona, I never did. I respected the Amrit Singh Chaud and the Guru, what Maharaj did. It was the punch bag he went and sacrificed and everything. And Maharaj showed
how... I actually think it's because people don't know really what it's about, honestly. I think people are that ignorant.
It's funny how people think that Maharaj cut a goat on stage or some shit, man. How Maharaj is some magician. You know, there's Mughal accounts that Maharaj beheaded the Panch Pyare on stage in front of everybody.
That's why.
Now you tell me, why would 35% of the Sangha get the runaway after the first? When Pai Daya Singh Ji got his... So when Pai Daya Singh Ji went on stage and whatever happened, 25% of the Sangha ran away.
Yeah.
Would the Sangha run away if Maharaj went into a tent, cut a goat, came back with a sword full of blood, or if Maharaj literally decapitated somebody on stage?
Yeah, I mean, that would be terrifying to the people.
People thought Guru Gobind Singh went crazy, man.
Yeah.
But people like to create this story of Maharaj took a goat into the tent, cut the goat's head off, and came out. Like, what, is Maharaj a liar to the Sangha? Like, why are you making Guru Gobind Singh into a liar?
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that in a podcast close to Vaisakhi, but I hate that fucking story where people say, yeah, Maharaj took a goat in the fucking tent and cut the goat off and then came out with the bloodied sword. Like, what, is Guru Gobind Singh a liar? Hey, is he tricking people to take Amrit?
Yeah, so what are these videos? Maybe this is somehow relevant. So what are these videos sometimes you see of people like beheading a goat?
That's Nahangsing Mariyada. That's Nahangsing Mariyada, right? Because back in the day when, especially the Jangi Nahangsings, when they had to, they used to go, like, even like Guru Gobind Singh, like, they used to go hunting because back in the day, you got to know how to use your weapons. You can't just use your weapon against a Kharbuja.
Right,
like,
right. Okay.
Again, this is a totally different environment, atmosphere. This is a jungle atmosphere.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize, a lot of people, just because we're in peaceful times right now, we don't appreciate the Hang Sings. Right? So how do you test out your weapons that you know that's not going to break in the middle of a battle, that you know it's going to create a mortal wound? It's not like how, like nowadays, like in these shows like Greatest Warrior or like Forge and Fire, where they have like these jelly torsos.
Yeah, Deadliest Warrior. Yeah, that was a good show.
Yeah, so like they could test out weapons on these torsos, yeah. Right?
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. I mean, there's obviously that we don't have the technology back then as we do now, right, to test out your...
Yeah, because your like... If you think about it, like you're in the middle of battle and your sword breaks, like
be the worst.
Like the battle just start, your first strike, your sword snaps in half, and you're in the middle of a bat, like a hand to hand combat. What the fuck are you gonna do now? You're gonna think, hey, maybe I should test out the sword before I jumped into this battle here. And that's what people kind of lose. People lose that respect towards the Hang Sings, right? That's their mariada. That's what they do, right? They're jungi. Like, they're ready for battle at any moment's notice. They're ready for battle.
Yeah.
And that's why they're called
Guru. Even Sadhguru, who I've, you know, he is what he is, but even he gives credit to the Hang Sings for keeping their mariada and, you know, staying true to their principles.
That little bit of osa that he did for Hang Sings might save him a bit from, from his karma, might clean up just a little bit with praising the Hang Sings now. Other than that, he, like we talked about last week, man.
Yeah.
His, have you seen that interview he had with Mike Tyson?
No, I don't even look. Whenever I see his clips on YouTube, I never click on it. I clicked on that Hang Sing one though, but I stopped listening. I listened to maybe like five to ten clips from him a few years ago and never watched him again.
Well, Mike Tyson got choked at him, kind of, because Mike Tyson kept asking, how many kids do you have? Because he knows that Sadhguru has kids, and Sadhguru kept deflecting the answer. And then Mike Tyson's like, how many kids do you have?
Yeah.
And then he's like, I have millions, but one was a mistake.
Oh. Yeah, there is some controversy around how Sadhguru's wife died. Like, there were some allegations against him, but I guess it's over now. But yeah.
No, but back to the Hang Sing thing. Yeah, like a lot of people need to back off from like what their mariada is and stuff, because they're born out of a jungi atmosphere, and the Sikh Panth hasn't lived in a jungle atmosphere in a long time. I mean, Chirasi was that type of... That's why sometimes Sings had to do some certain things that people don't fucking agree with. But hey, it is what it is. Like,
leave the Nahongs.
General Lob Singh and Jinda guys stealing money, robbing a bank to fund getting weapons. The biggest bank robbery in India was by Kharku Singhs. But back in the day when Amar Shah Abdali and Nader Shah used to come and leave with a caravan of loot, the Singhs used to loot those too to buy weapons and fund langar.
Hmm.
In a jungi atmosphere, sometimes these things you gotta do, man. You can't be a hardcore like Sant and be like, oh, I'm not gonna freaking even bend a flower. No, man, jungi atmosphere is a different atmosphere. That's the beauty about Sikhi. Sikhi can reside in both atmospheres. A lot of Dharms can't. A lot of spiritual paths can't. Because a lot of the spiritual paths even don't have the principle of jungi principles. Guru Gobind Singh gave us jungi principles too. You don't attack somebody who has no weapons. You don't attack somebody who's running away from the battle. These type of principles Guru Sahib gave us. You don't touch women. You don't touch children. You don't touch innocent. That kind of stuff. Yeah. Other Dharms don't have that type of principles in the jungi atmosphere. Look at the Crusades. Look at what Islamic empires and armies have done, right? Look what Christian armies have done. They've raped, looted, destroyed other people, right? But Maharaj, even in Jung times, has given us principles. We're the only dharma that has that.
Yeah, so, people were coming, people, yeah, looted, killed, everything. I was just going to say, Guru Gobind Singh Ji would actually cover, they would add, they would make their arrows gold plated, some of them.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Right?
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
To support the fallen. Like that's, yeah. That's the only, I don't know, like someone that's years ahead of their time, a great Mahapurak would do, right? A great guru like Guru Gobind Singh Ji. There's not a lot of people that would do that.
That just shows the difference between a Kahal Purak themselves and a messenger or a type of prophet, man.
Yeah.
If you look at Guru Tegh Bahadur Ji, and then if you look at Guru, like what they did. Like, so Guru Gobind Singh Ji putting gold on arrows so that the fallen soldier's army family could pay for the funeral and have a little bit of money.
Right.
Not only that, look, all those people who were fallen from Guru Gobind Singh Ji's, you know, weapons, they were blessed in the next life too.
Yeah.
They were blessed in their next life. If you read a lot of Jivan Sakhis and Mahapuraks, there's a lot of Sikhs that are born that were actually Mughals in their past life, but they were basically killed on a battlefield by one of our Guru Sahib's weapon.
Wow.
So Maharaj blessed them with Sikhi in their next life. That's a Kalpurk, man. That's like God themselves can only do that.
Dude, what's that line was it Guru Gobind Singh or someone else who said that, you know, I'm going to bless you with an arrow piercing through your chest or something?
Yeah, I think it was one of the generals during the Battle of Chamkor who was trying to hide or something. And Maharaj said, right. Why don't you fight me like a freaking man instead of hiding behind the wall? He's like, I'll bless you with an arrow through the chest.
Right, but yeah, that's it. So, you know, when you say bless, and I'm hearing the stories that, you know, people that were killed by Guru Gobind Singh Ji were actually born into Sikh families. Like that, maybe that's the bless that Guru Gobind Singh Ji was talking about.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. That is really cool.
Because if you think about it, a lot of these Mughal soldiers and a lot of these Pahari soldiers, they're just like salary peasant people, man, that have to fight because they're the stupid Raja are wanting to fight.
Yeah, you know what? That's actually one of the really cool things, you know, the difference between Sikhi and like the Mughals. And Sikhi, you know, you're not forced to take Amrit, right? It's voluntary. But people did it because they were inspired by Guru Gobind Singh Ji. Whereas in the Mughals, you know, it's like being drafted. It's like you don't have a choice.
No. Like, look at Sakya Pai Bajitra Singh and the elephant, right? Though another Singh was, I think it was Dulla Chand or something like that. I forgot his name anyways. Another Singh was told to do it. He says, I ain't doing it. And then Maharaj asked Pai Bajitra Singh, say, do you want to go? Pai Bajitra Singh said, Sat Bachan.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not like Bhai Bajitra Singh was forced, but look, Maharaj blessed him so much that everybody knows the Sakhi, those people who fucking care about anything about Sikh history.
Yeah. Right.
Like his name is immortal now, Bhai Bajitra Singh.
Yeah. And, you know, in the Sakhis we'll get into next week, you know, when the Sabs are there, they actually approach Guru Gobind Singh Ji before going out of the walls of the that fortress at Chamkor.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll discuss Chamkor Sahib. We'll discuss Sirhind, what happened to Chhote Sahibzade. Then we'll discuss a little bit of what happened after Guru Gobind Singh Ji left Chamkor Sahib and went to the Machiwada jungle. And then Uchda Peer, like those type of Sakhiyan, right? We'll just do little snippets as we go next episode here.
Sounds good.
All right. Good episode.
All right, guys. See you next time on the 10 King
on the Buzzkill Podcast.
सुखाड़ा है जो सदा ही अंग संग है।